everybody. Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we do something that no podcast has ever done before, which is review comic books.
What?
I know. It kind of blew my mind when I first heard it as well. But we rarely do a live show called Comic Book Club every Tuesday night in New York that's totally free. We review comics there live on stage, which is the way people typically do it.
Right.
But then we decided, why not do it live and not do it on stage and maybe not do this explanation at the beginning of every episode?
That would be great. Yeah, I would love that.
You like that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we're going to jump into a couple of comic reviews today. Since Justin isn't here, we've replaced him with an extra comic in the stack. So we're going to
Justin was replaceable with a comic.
I think we are all replaceable by comics,
true.
To be fair.
That's a good point.
So we're going to talk about four comics that came out today, or if you're listening to it tomorrow, then yesterday, I guess. Does that make sense?
Let's not do the math on that.
No, do it to the math?
Yeah.
Okay, first one, I just wanted to mention, I feel a little bad about this. And the reason I feel a little bad is every episode of The Stack in this current iteration that we've done, I realized, has had a Batman book.
Yep. And because of you.
Because of me?
Yeah.
Well, not just Batman, but I'm saying like Detective Comics or Batman in the Shadow. We've done a different book with Batman every single time. And I think that kind of speaks to how good the Batline is right now. All of the things that are being released for the Batman books from, I don't know if Super Sons is technically a Batman book. That was the first one that came to mind. But like Detective to the main title to All-Star Batman are so good.
Is great, too.
They're great. All of the Batman stuff is really, really good. Metal is a lot of fun. But the one we're talking about today is Batman number 31, which is part 5 of The War of Jokes and Riddles. Script by Tom King. Pencils and cover by Mikkel Janine, I assume is how you pronounce
it. Sure.
And Pete, I have a feeling this is going to be a little bit of a contentious stack between you and me, but I got to tell you, I read this book and I screamed out loud.
What?
I loved it so much. So much.
Were you yelling, hell yeah, every time?
Pretty much. But I was on the subway and I went, ah, ha, 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 out of joy. I just cackled out of joy while reading this book. So
What part of this book made you do that?
That's twice. Two different, entirely different parts of this book made me do it. So if you haven't been keeping up with the storyline, this is going back in time. Batman has proposed to Catwoman, and in order to let her fully understand him, he's telling a story of the War of Jokes and Riddles, which is when the Riddler and Joker, as you could probably guess, went to war over Gotham City. They each had different armies of supervillains. And over the past couple of issues, Batman chose a side. He realized, I can't stop the Riddler or the Joker, so I'm going to join one of them and take down the other one. So he ends up,
which is insane to me. But instead of dealing with all that coolness, we're dealing with what, Zalbin? Your favorite part about Batman is what?
Kite Man.
Kite Man.
Hell yeah.
We're fucking talking about Kite Man.
Here's what I think is so goddamn brilliant about this. God. So Tom King,
brilliant's a big word to use, bro.
It is an accurate word.
Nope.
Throughout Tom King's run on this title, which now is 31 issues old, he's been peppering this thing where Kite Man will show up on one page, kite on his way in, get beaten up by Batman, and then say, hell yeah, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's how I like Kite Man.
So he's peppered in this character throughout the run, and then in the War of Jokes and Riddles, there's been two interludes, both titled The Ballad of Kite Man, which Pete has hated.
Yep.
I have loved so much, because the first issue, you did not realize it was the origin of Kite Man, how he ended up being such a dumb-sounding villain like Kite Man until the very end of the issue, and it was such a gut punch. So huge. The second issue was great because it advanced the plot, but again, expanded on the character of Kite Man. And this issue, we get the payoff to 31 issues this Kite Man thing. Yes, absolutely.
It's the payoff that everyone gets a kite, because I was like, this is bullshit.
Yes, so Batman is teamed up with the Riddler. Joker is alone. He's on 38th floor, something like that. Probably a reference to Detective Comics 38, the first appearance of Batman, I'm going to guess. I think that's right.
Ooh.
Right? Maybe? I don't know. Somebody will tell me if I'm wrong, probably. And so Riddler says, there's no way of getting in there. We can't get into that floor. It's too high up. And Batman said,
yeah, what can we do? How can we get so high up? Let's fly some fucking kites.
Dude, you got a two-page spread of Killer Croc and all these villains on fucking kites.
It's so dumb.
So cool.
Nope.
Such a payoff because he has had been so sad.
They worked so hard to be like, they're in this tall building.
Dark, how upsetting are we gonna do arc. It? And he gets his heroic moment. He brings everybody over. And then that was the first time that I screamed out loud, was the double page spread of everybody on kites flying to stop the Joker.
Which made me roll my fucking eyes.
They smash through the window. They confront the Joker. And Riddler's like, well, now we're going to kill you, Joker. What can you do, Batman? You can't stop us. And Batman reveals that he was working with Kite Man the whole time. Kite Man augmented everybody's kites, and they all get sucked out back out the window. And he goes, hell yeah. And that was the second time I screamed. Because that, to me, that is the point when it completely finished his redemption arc. Everything has been worth it up till this point. Nope. I love it. Rename it Kite Man. We need Kite Man Begins. We need Kite Man Rises. The Kite Man Rises Again. Kite
Slow
Man Returns.
Your fucking
Kite
roll.
Man and, I don't know, Boxin? Boxin? What would Kite Man's sidekick
I'm not going to participate in this bullshit. So, yeah. So here we have Tom King going, you know what? What if we took a thing like Stilt Man, which is a stupid character, and actually spent a lot of time trying to flesh out and make an amazing story?
You're selling this to me so far. Go on.
Yeah. But the problem is it's still fucking Kite Man. So it's hard for me to get on board. And also, as I'm reading this, I just was like, man, don't fuck with my Batman shit. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to have, like, after credits story with Kite Man and, you know, and divide it up, great. But right now, I'm missing a battle that I never thought of and never got to experience. The Joker versus the Riddler, that's amazing. I want to see this battle. But I want to see this war. We don't spend any time on it. All we keep talking about is this shitty Kite Man.
So I'll mention two things about that. One, there's the pretty frequent maxim that there are no bad characters. It's just what you do with them. And that Tom King is proving to a T here, that he is completely fleshing out this character of Kite Man that nobody would give a second thought to and made it this beautiful, heartfelt, amazing action arc. It's great. The second thing that I'm going to sort of agree with you on is an interesting thing that's been pretty much throughout Tom King's run of Batman. Most of it hasn't been about Batman. And most of it
nothing's been about Batman. Batman picked a side. He sided with the bad guy. We're not even dealing with that.
I'm not even talking about just the War of Jokes and Riddles. I'm talking about pretty much all of it. You know, there's been some exceptions here and there, and he's done some wonderful things with the character. But
yeah, he's like married now. We don't get anything.
Hold on. The first arc was almost completely focused on Gotham Girl and Gotham Man, I think. I don't know. He died. But it was focused on them and their journey and what's going on with them.
Yeah.
Then we got the Bane arc, and that was almost entirely focused on Bane.
That was
amazing. It was great. But a lot of it has been about other characters and developing them and working out their journey. I've loved it because they're really beautiful, exciting stories. But Batman is almost the least interesting part of all of these stories that he's telling, which is kind of fascinating in a certain way.
Sure, yeah, in a certain way. In a certain way of like, hey, man, do you not like this main character that's been beloved for all these years? Good news.
But so many stories have been told about Batman. So many stories have been explored about Batman.
Right. So
fleshing
we're just going to stop
the rest
doing
of the
that?
Cast.
Just
he's done beautiful things. This is a Joker story and a Riddler story that we've never seen before.
And we still didn't get to see it.
But next issue.
Will we? Or is it just going to be a fucking epilogue about Kite Man and like, hey, let's all reflect on how special he is.
Oh, man, that would be great.
I hate you. So, yeah, man, it's enjoyable for some, frustrating for others.
All right. Well, I think this issue is great. You should definitely pick it up.
Nope.
Pete totally disagrees. Let's go to your stupid pick again. Headlopper number 7
yes.
from Image Comics.
Woo!
Now, I haven't actually read this, I think.
I'm not done yet. Hoo-wee! Headlopper.
More than meets the eye.
Yep.
So this is written by Andrew McLean, who's also the artist and letters and design.
He does everything.
Except for the colors. That's Jordi Belair, who does colors for basically everything.
Okay.
Now,
sorry.
You love this book. Talk about why you like about this
book. I love this book. Because you know what you're getting into. You know, it's a simple concept. It's a guy who's got to lop some heads. And what I like about it is, in this issue in particular, we kind of get a little bit more of what's going on, the other moving pieces. We get to kind of see some other perspectives of the other characters in the book. Headlopper is a man on a quest, and he's focused on getting things done. And he doesn't care whose head he's got to lop off. He doesn't care.
Kind of amazing to me that you called out Headlopper for having a simple concept, but you don't like Kite Man. I'm just mentioning.
Yeah, sure. You can say that.
I did say
just because you pointed out doesn't mean it's, you know.
I'd also say, so the first issue of this book, I remember very clearly, was a lot of heads and a lot of lopping. A lot less lopping heads by issue 7.
Yep.
Still a little bit.
Yeah, you get a little taste.
You get a little taste of the old.
Also, he's got to carry a head around with him everywhere he goes.
I mean, that's a lopped head. Right. I want to see some lopping.
So you want more lopping in your head lopper?
Right. Yeah. I just feel like there's not enough lopping for a book called Head Lopper. There's a lot of heads, mind you.
Yeah, a lot of heads.
Not a lot of lopping of said heads. So, I don't know. This is a beautiful book. The character designs are great. It's kind of like
Adventure Time meets Conan the Barbarian.
I think that's fair. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty good. There's a small character who I don't know the name of yet, who I assume was introduced in intervening issues that I really enjoyed the design of a lot. Little red guy.
Yeah.
Crawling around stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. What's his name?
I don't know.
Oh, great. You're a good reader.
I'm not a good reader.
So that's great. The witch head that goes around with Head Lopper and provides commentary is pretty great.
Yeah.
And this has become kind of like an epic fantasy book. It's enjoyable. I recommend it.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable. It's a lot of fun. And it's also like, I like the fact that, you know, as the story unfolds, we kind of learn more about Headlopper and his quest and kind of like what he's put up against and how he's going to get out of it. It's a simple concept that I don't get tired of.
Yeah, the thing that's great about it is, if you really think about it, anything has a head. So this could go on forever. He could keep lopping heads forever. Like, even if he kills all the humans, kills all the beasts, top of a tree, kind of a head.
Maybe.
You can lop it.
You can lop it.
You can lop it.
Can you lop it is the...
right. And he always says, I can lop it. And then he lops it. Yeah, this book is great. All right, let's move on with another pick. You mentioned Conan. Nice tie-in. Thank you for teeing that up. Wonder Woman Conan number 1 from DC Comics.
Oh, Gail Simone. Now,
yeah, Gail Simone is back on Wonder Woman.
On Wonder Woman.
Are you just going to repeat everything that I...
I was just excited. You haven't been saying what I'm saying now.
I wasn't sure.
Yep.
All right.
I really love, as far as first issues go, I think this does an amazing job of setting up a world that you can get excited about. What was awesome is I got so wrapped up in this, I forgot it was a Wonder Woman book. You're reading about Conan and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's this badass warrior. She can't be beaten. And I'm like, oh, man, wonder who it is. And then I'm like, oh, right. And I just thought it was such a great kind of like way of introducing, instead of the classic, we're going to fight, and then we're going to stop and realize, oh, we're on the same team. Conan kind of stumbles across Wonder Woman, who is kind of gladiator style whooping some ass.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised myself because most of the book is about this beefy warrior type guy who eventually meets up with Wonder Woman. And like, Conan doesn't show up the entire book at all, which is crazy to me. I was expecting it, like, maybe they're going to go to the future. How are they going to end up his talk show? I don't get it at all yet, but I'm excited to see where it goes and when eventually he shows up down the road.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's a great book. You know, you can try to poke holes in it, but I think it's a solid book.
Well, I'm just saying, he's a tall Irishman. You don't think you could miss him. Why isn't he in the book? It's a weird choice not to put him in the first issue and not to have it set at his talk show on TBS, but he's not there, and it's all good.
That there, you know, there's two Conans, right?
Yeah, well, like, there's the more serious Conan, and then there's the funny Conan.
Right. This isn't a book about the funny Conan.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, the more serious Conan when, like, he has to do charities and stuff.
No, Conan the Barbarian.
I wouldn't call him a barbarian. He's just on TBS. It's not like...
This bit is great. I think it's a great bit.
Thank you. By the way, tune into our other podcast, Rating Your Bits, where we make bits and then rate each other's bits in real time.
Yep.
What was nice about that was watching you not catch on for a while and knowing that I just had to keep going no matter what.
Oh, man. Because I was like, what are you talking about? Conan is in this book. What is he?
Well, I appreciate the fact that you just went with it.
Yeah.
That I'm being a stupid idiot. I really like this book as well. Gail Simone, of course, is great at both the sword and sorcery stuff and the Wonder Woman stuff. Alan Lopestri is on the art, and he's great as well. It's just a good, classic, fun book, and I agree. You know, you throw Wonder Woman and Conan the Barbarian in a gladiator-type situation, you can't quite go wrong.
No.
One of the things that I found most surprising was Conan the Barbarian's kindness in this book. That he has what he thinks is a connection to Wonder Woman. He probably doesn't, let's be fair, but it gives it a nice emotional context that I don't always really expect from a Conan book, because mostly what I expect from a Conan book is him eating a bunch of meat, killing people, and being a head lopper, basically.
Right, yeah, being...
But this is good. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it does a good job of like setting it up, and it's also interesting, too, because it's like... Conan, when you first see him, stumbles across these guys like harassing this other dude, and Conan's like, "Yeah, mate, go about your business," which I thought was a fun moment. So, yeah, there was kind of like some decisions Conan had to make.
Yeah. Let's move on to our last pick. This is from Image Comics. This is Angelic number one. Now, this is written by Simon Spurrier, who you might recognize from a bunch of other weird fantasy books that he did for Image. He also did a run on X-Men for a while and other things. The art is by Casper Wingard, letters by Jim Campbell, and designed by Emma Price. Now, Image, we talked about this a couple of episodes back, tends to launch a lot of weird sci-fi books all the time. So to me, they often end up being like a blur of spaceships and dystopian futures and other things. This is real unique. This is very different. And I'm almost hesitant to spoil anything about it because I read this book and I like Simon Spurrier a lot. So reading the first half is all about this winged monkey that talks in a bunch of future nonsense language, living in kind of a dystopian future that's been overrun. And I didn't get it. I didn't get what was going on. But the more you read, the more you start to understand the language, what they're talking about. And it just very, very slowly unfolds what's going on in this world and what the impetus for the book is by the end of the first issue. And I was completely sucked in by the end. Now, you did not feel the same, Pete.
No, it's just a bunch of animals fighting each other. And I'm like, you know, it's hard because anytime I see like a intelligent dolphin, I immediately think of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Sure.
And they're kind of like flying dolphins, which is cool, creative. And then talking monkeys that are like mating in a weird tent. And then like, okay, you think that like we're going to get like a human kind of thing in this last kind of reveal. Nope, just an adorable looking weird animal. So like, I don't know whose side I'm on yet or what's going on. I know there's a lot of fighting, which I enjoy, but I'm not really, I felt like it did a great job. The art's unbelievable of like setting up this beautiful world in a kind of a different society. Cool, great. But I didn't know who I was rooting for, which side I was on, or what's going on. So.
Well, there's the main winged monkey in the book. So to give you guys, I mean, this gets into spoilers a little bit, but to give you guys the lay of the land. So it's set in this futuristic, we think, society where there's a bunch of winged monkeys. They follow the lore, which is the rules that have been laid down to them about humans and other creatures, and they have to follow the lore. And there's one monkey that keeps asking questions.
Yep.
She keeps asking questions about everything and keeps getting punished over and over in a really fun montage sequence that I don't think I've seen a montage sequence played out that way in a comic before. She keeps asking things in the middle of all these different routines and keeps getting extra chores because of it. And eventually, it becomes clear that they live in a patriarchal society where the women have their wings cut off and are forced to carry babies, but they don't like it, but that's their only role in life. That's the only thing they have.
Great. It's awful. Let's make another future or another world that's also really shitty for women.
That's like the Handmaid's Tale, but with monkeys.
Yeah, it's like, can we have a world where the women are running shit, the men are assholes?
You know, there's also, I don't know if this is specifically the inspiration, but it struck me a little bit Wizard of Oz-ish with the winged monkeys, and it's the beginning of this journey that this one monkey is clearly going to go on to show us the world and show us what has happened to this world and how this happened to this world. It's, given the dark subject matter that I just laid out, it's surprisingly sunny and sweet and funny. Like you mentioned, there's the flying dolphins that shoot lasers and other creatures like that. There is a lot of darkness in it, but
yeah, it's weird because it keeps talking about the darkness and you're supposed to just kind of ignore it and kind of keep going, but it's all this weird like touch me, feel me, ugh, and it's like, oh, this is fucking
gross. There's an actual thing called darkness that shows up at a certain point. There's a lot of ideas in this book, and I think it's really cool, but it's also very accessible at the same time. So one of the things I told you, Pete, before you read the book is stick with it. You know, I was ready to not give up, but, you know, put it down for a little bit after the first couple of pages. But I plugged on through. And like I said, you really get a sense of it and the rhythm of it. And I thought it was really cool.
Great.
Great. Thanks for humoring me.
Yeah, I think Alex thought it was great. I thought it was a little rapey, but we'll see where it goes.
Oh, great. Thanks for dropping that there right at the end. Guys, if you want to support this show and the other shows that we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We'll give you a shout out in our show and other things. Also, as mentioned, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. in New York that's totally free. You can come on by, get some free prizes, things like that. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend of Sun Facebook, so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have in our upcoming show.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com, Twitter at comicbooklive, and remember, until next time, Kite Man, hell yeah.